Welcome to the Conscious Investor. Let's get started.
All the good podcast content is before you hit record and after you hit record.
It always is. So yeah, you did. You invited yourself on, but I was going to invite you on because I was like, you understand. There's a topic I want to cover with you.
We can talk about anything in the whole wide world that you want. But also as far as like inviting yourself to podcast, that's sort of like the name of my life. I just basically, I shove my life into other people's life. And then, you know, it's a little bit of friction at first, then you sort of get used to it.
Okay. So really what I wanted to talk to you about was about being invisible. Like, so actually the inverse of that, right? But I feel like there are some of us who have like just different dispositions in life and different ways of going about things where it's like, I'm not going to put you in the box, but I used to kind of keep myself in the little invisible box, like, oh, just stay invisible. And I kept trying to contain my personality and who I was. And then I realized like, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to just be your authentic self. And so just go with that, girl. And so now I'm no longer invisible, mm-hmm. Right?
Definitely not invisible. You're lively. Yeah, I don't know. It's so funny. I have this conversation with you all the time. It's a weird vibe because it's a weird kind of state because we live in this world where like sort of good marketing wins, not good personality, which is an interesting thing because like I have a big personality, but I don't have a really good marketing talent. So like I'm not that visible on the internet, but if you go to somewhere where I'm at, you will know that I'm there. Like if you meet me in person, I'm undeniable.
I've had a hard time finding you at the event we were at in February. I was like, I don't understand. Where is this guy with this really great hair and these, you know, amazing shoes that are vibrant?
Yeah.
I really had a hard time locating you.
Yeah. But as far as the other side of that, like finding one's individual, it's so funny. I'm actually reading Nietzsche for book club, and he's a big proponent of hyper individuality. And it's, I don't know that I have any good answers other than, you know, I sort of been a rebel forever, like a little bit of a, you know, whatever's popular, I hate it just for cause, you know? And so that forces you to find your way a little bit because you're like, whatever everybody else is doing, I'm going to do the opposite. And then eventually, you know, what I thought was teenage angst turned into like, oh, I really just want to be like a hyper individual. The other part of it, I think, is, you know, we all get confidence as we accomplish things in life. And so what starts out of as, you know, I'm going to be quiet and invisible because maybe my confidence level isn't where I wanted it to be or where I thought it should be or whatever the case may be. Everybody's got their own journey. But then as you get older, I think, you know, you accomplish things. And then if you're paying attention, you find out that those people who are accomplishing things, they're generally not any smarter or better at life than you. They're just either maybe a little bit earlier, they found an opportunity that you didn't see right away, or they said yes when you were saying no, and they were being loud when you were being quiet, and they were no more qualified than you. And so there's a lot of times after you see that enough, you're like, okay, I'm just going to be loud because apparently anybody can do it.
That's crazy because honestly, I can attest to that. Like the more I progress in life and the more experience I gain, the more I realize, for lack of a better term, anytime I go into an event where I feel, wow, I shouldn't even be here. I hosted an international event with some very ginormous venture capitalists and like very prominent people in the international realm. This is a year and a half ago. All that to say, I just told myself, because I was freaking out a little bit once I realized what I had gotten myself into by saying yes and who I was going to be around. I'm like, oh, I shouldn't even be here. And I remember driving into town with my daughter. And I said, I was thinking aloud, and I said, I'm just really nervous about this, but you know what? Everybody poops.
Yeah.
There's a book about it. I read it to you when you were a kid, and really everybody poops. We're all human. And so they're human. And like you said, okay, they just have a little bit more than I do.
Yeah. And people kind of like we're having this conversation about authenticity. I find that people really do sort of balance themselves out. I know very successful people that have no personality at all whatsoever. You know, they're great at running a business, but they have no idea about, you know, who they are, or they have no confidence. It's a very interesting dynamic. And then I know very successful people financially that are have personal lives that are train wrecks. So I think sort of what I'm saying is like people balance out as a whole. So, you know, what you're good at is what, you know, everybody else is kind of bad at generally. Or you know, you'll find your place. So you go on stage and you talk to somebody about something, you know, it's like, well, you know what? They might know some, they know more or have some different experience than you in some areas, but certainly not in others. And also I'm sort of the opinion that like the overwhelmingly vast majority of the world is fraudulent. You know, there's like an overwhelming amount of faking going on. And so it's just like, oh, well, I don't actually have to fake. I'm just the one. What do you mean tell you?
It freaks people out. How do people, because I feel like you and I are very kindred spirits like that. And it took me a long time to just take a deep breath and just realize like, not everybody's going to like me, and that's okay. But if I'm me, it's going to bring the right people into my life. And I don't know. I remember going through a process.
Sure. I don't know when I figured this out, but I've been abrasive my whole life. I'm from Rhode Island. You know, that little Boston, you know, New York City.
It explains Providence. Everything.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I live in the South and people are like, you're so abrasive. I'm like, no, I'm regular. I'm not special. So I sort of figured it out. Maybe I don't know when, but certainly not too long ago, where I used to think that if you wanted to be like well-liked or, you know, be socially, call it successful, whatever that means, right? Socially healthy, that you sort of had to make 80% of people like you. And then like, you know, wherever the number actually fell, you know, you didn't get all the 80%. I didn't really try that, but that's kind of how I thought it was supposed to work. And I was bad at it because I was never trying to make everybody like me. I was always kind of like, you know, ribbing people. But then I kind of matured out of that. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing that anymore. And I started looking at politics and I was like, how do you get elected? You don't go for 80% of the vote and hope you get 51. You go for 50, but that's not true. You go for 51, but that's not really actually what started happening over the last, you know, last couple of years. They stopped doing that. What they started doing, which I really like, is they just started trying to piss off the wrong 49%.
That's so true.
And so what I do, not to make it, you know, it's not about politics. It's about like, I don't try to appease everybody and hope I find the right people. I try to find the wrong people for me and look at them and go like, what are you and I not vibe about? Let me just inflame that a little bit. And then turns out the people who do like you, they start popping up and they're like, oh, Alex, he's a smack talker, or he's the people who like, I'm loud and that's not good for everybody. Some people don't like loud. They don't like the abrasiveness. They don't like obnoxious. They don't like how ridiculous I am, my hair and the pink t-shirts and stuff. And it's like the people who do like that, they show right up. And so I just do it more and the wrong people go away and the right people show up. It works really good.
It's really amazing. It really is like a magnet. So, okay. So is that how we connected? Is
no,
that what
you
happened?
Emailed me. No,
no, bro. No. At the event.
No.
I mean,
this is
I
what
remember.
Happened. Yeah, this is what happened. You messaged me on LinkedIn and you're like,
oh,
hey,
this is hilarious. This
listen
is
to
great.
My podcast and I'm going to be at this thing. And I was a little turned off because I'm like, well, I don't like being solicited to, which I mean, which is, you know, that's my fault because it's LinkedIn and it's the entire internet has turned into a
marketing
machine.
You know what it was? It was the Whova app. It was the app they're using.
Yeah, that's what it was. Right.
And I'm like, dude, I love to serve people here. Listen to my podcast.
You did the 100% right thing. I'm like a crank. I'm a grump about it. I'm just being grumpy. And so
you're being a Rhode Island.
I was just being a jerk. Yeah. And so I was like, everybody, you know, I got tons of them. And I was like, oh, don't like you. All to this whole big bulk of people. But then also, I also know that people are diverse and complicated and, you know, unique and special and, you know, they're diverse. So I was like, whatever. It's all theatrical, right? I'm like, whatever. This person's listening to me. I was like, she doesn't actually have any care about anything I have going on. She's just selling her thing. And it's not about you as much as about, like, that's what everybody is kind of, you know, doing. And so when I met you, I think I told you that right away. I was like, oh yeah, you're trying to sell me something or whatever. And, but then, you know, we vibe really quick. So no hard feelings.
I think it's funny because, so one of my blocks, this is a really interesting dichotomy because like one of my blocks is like, I have an aversion to sending out messages like that because my threshold is like, I like 101% authenticity in all of life. And so I always have this hesitation and this fear every single time I've ever sent one of those messages. I'm always like, oh my gosh, what if they don't know I actually really care? And I know that this will really like support them wherever they are, because I know I have like crazy cool content on my podcast. Like I have amazing people that show up on this podcast. I know this is going to support anybody. And I always hesitate. And then it's like, okay, it's in line. It's exactly what you're saying. I'm like, well, they're either going to like it or they're not going to like it, but I'm going to seek to serve.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's very, my story on it is quite theatrical, but the reality is, as long as you have good motives, the internet's a great tool to meet people. I meet people on the internet all the time. I do like weird, you know, hey, I saw you on this thing and now we're about to be best friends and you have no idea on the internet, you know, this kind of thing. Right. And so, it doesn't work on everybody, but I don't know. I wouldn't neuroticize about it too much. Just, you know, do your thing. As long as you do it with good intentions. As long as you do it with good intentions, then no malice, no selfishness, then who cares? Some people are going to get rubbed the wrong way. And like, I couldn't be bothered to care.
You know, it's taken me a long time. So I have this thing. I've told my husband that I need to go live on the East Coast for 6 months to a year because I grew up in California. Mm-hmm. And the difference, since I collaborate with so many people, so many East Coasters, and the difference is so significant that, and like you're saying, people in the South are like, whoa, what's up with you? People just need to go and move. And I've lived in a few different regions of the country. So it's like, just go and move to a different region and learn, like, it's not you, it's just how they communicate. So like, if I would have met you, say, 4 years ago, I probably would have been like, oh my gosh. He's so abrasive, or he's so this, or I would have just like gone through all these, like put you in all these different boxes. And now it's like, no, it's communication style. We're good. Super cool person.
I'm very direct. I'm very direct. And I'm very kind of, I don't do small talk. I'm like, let's hit you straight. And then, you know,
dude, Nietzsche.
And then I'm, what's that?
Nietzsche. That's not small talk at all.
No, it's not small talk. Yeah. And, I'm a little bit of a, you know, I'm a ball buster. And then I joined the army. So like, you know, I'm just, I joke, like I'm a little rougher on the edges, but then I'm kind of a little rough in the middle too.
You're like, there really isn't a soft spot in here. No, I know that's not true.
Yeah. No, it's just, you kind of, you know, I have my style. What do you want to tell you? You know,
I know.
I call it the joke in my social circle is that I create Stockholm syndrome in people. Like I just abuse them. And then they get used to it. And they're like, oh, Alex, he's just misunderstood. He's not that bad.
Oh my gosh. That is really, really funny. Okay. What'd you gain from the military? My 13-year-old son right now, he's like, I think I want to go to the military.
I wouldn't be me without the military. The military made me, it gave me a lot. My only big complaint with the military is that along the way, I learned about geopolitics. And, you know, I've been unhappy with the George Bush era, which is when I was in. So I kind of have like a dual thing where it's like the army was great for me. Also, I'm incredibly disappointed and mad at, you know, the American diplomacy of that era. And almost all the eras, actually, if you want to get. So for going in and doing 4 years and being able to see the world and jumping out of airplanes and being in positions of both subordination and leadership, being in group settings, being in high stress settings. Like, dude, we live in the easiest life that has ever existed in humanity, and people are the whiniest and the most entitled. And it's like, go live out of a bag and a couple of MREs where they have no running water for 9 months and you will get tightened right up.
Seriously.
Yeah. So for me, like, seeing that the rest of the world has it way harder than us and we are way whinier about it, that tightened me up. Being in a position where, you know, you got a ranking officer, like, you know, they're on you, bro. They are on you. Or, you know, having to do stuff that you know, it's a humbling experience. Like, you are forced to do things that you don't want to do, which in American life doesn't actually happen that often, but it's kind of the way the world actually works. So it's healthy to have a good respect for, you know, how easy our lives are. It also I mean, it'll just toughen you up. You get to see the world. You get to do some really, you know, it's controlled chaos. It's good to be in stressful situations in the world, in life, because then you don't get so beat up by small things. And so being around gas chambers and weapons and explosions and firearms and, you know, long, grueling hikes and sleepless nights. And I mean, just stress, just nonstop stress for a good amount of time, but controlled, right? It's not like you're not in a prison camp. You're just, it's healthy stress. It's controlled stress. So all those things, very, very good. Obviously there's a tremendous amount of risk that comes with it because, you know, I graduated from high school in July. I turned 18 in August. I was gone September 11th. It was 01. I was gone.
Oh,
September
my 20. Gosh.
I was gone. No, I take it back. I was gone October 25th. So I signed up like a few weeks later and I was gone.
Whoa. Yeah.
So you do
like
have
that,
like,
helped you? Like, do you think that was like, because I really believe that we're always like, and I think we have a shared belief, like we're evolving and progressing as humans, as people, as individuals, and all these experiences really influence us, you know, in that process.
I was a apathetic slacker with a bad attitude and a big ego, and I had no talent, and I was just I needed an ass kicking, and I needed some perspective. So it was very healthy for me. You know, it's not a good, if you want to make a lot of money or be a business owner, it's not a good move. I mean, it didn't like teach me how to be a successful business owner, but I would have been so many of my friends from high school are still in the same town doing the same thing. So like it got me a much bigger perspective of the world. Dude, going to Afghanistan for 9 months the first time, you know, it's like you realize that the world is way bigger than wherever you're from, way, way bigger. And then, you know, I went to South Korea. I went to Turkey. Like, I went around. And so you look around, you're like, okay, whatever I think, that it teaches you some independence. So then, like, when I got out, I was like, okay, I can basically go, I don't know, it takes time. Even when I got out.
Where do I want to live? What do I want to do?
Yeah, like, but even then it took time. Like, I still, it's one part of growth. It's not going to, I don't want to say that it's going to be like 4 years and you're transformed as much as, like, life, like you said, is a journey of transformations. But that one has been an incredibly valuable one for me. It's a hard one to recommend because, you know, there is a risk. There is a tremendous risk that's going to come. It's not like a money risk, but
it's a life and death risk.
There is a significant health risk to joining the military. And then also you got to be part of some stupid, you know, political war, perhaps that's not, you know, always, not always what you want. But that being said, as an individual human being, what the military did for me was, I mean, tremendous beyond what I can explain.
Well, it seems that way because like you even jumped back to that, right? Like through this, I mean, we're having this discussion and that was like one of the experiences you like, boom, you know, I feel like our most authentic part of us will like just rise to the surface really quickly. I mean, the military.
Yeah, if you go to conferences, like if I go to conferences all the time, conference junkie, I go to 4 or 5 of them a year. The military people will always hang out together, always. Like it'll always descend in there because you, you know, they have the thickest skin. I'll tell you that straight out. And so those are generally the people that can put up with me the most. Also, I mean, I am a co-host of a military entrepreneur podcast, so I kind of, I'm in that. You know, it's at top of mind a little bit. But I mean, I did get out. Dude, I got out in 05. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, but it shaped me. Right. And it's like, it's so amazing how I think even at those early adult years, how we're shaped so tremendously by our experiences. It's pretty wild to me. So
yeah, that's why people should have broad and intense experiences, because then you get all the life. If you just like dawdle in your house in a bubble, and it's like, dude, you're gonna get older, and it's harder to do. I don't want to jump out of airplanes now. I'm over it. I'm done with it. I'm just done with it. And so like, dude, you might miss it, but I jumped out of the back of a Chinook once. Like, you know what I mean? Like you kind of got to do that stuff when you're young. You kind of got to go try it all when you're young. It feels like the things that we screw around with when we're young, like, you know, relationships, like superficial relationships, or our, you know, music, or our friends, or these like things that seem so big, they can deter us from doing things that are like difficult, intense, hard, and you know, seeing the broad spectrum of experience, which is how you find out what you really like and what you really don't like.
And you find out what you're really made of and what you're really capable of doing and what your maxed out threshold is.
Yeah.
See, there's like this pause because like you can't have a comment like that without like having a pause of everyone has that. I mean, even if you're not in the military, you've had that experience where you're just like, you could tap out like, dang, this is, I don't know though. Maybe, I mean, I'm with you. My husband and I talk about that. People are really soft, you know, Western culture, at least in America, like so soft. Yeah,
we're so soft. It's ridiculous. You know, I just think like 150 years ago, there was no air conditioning and people had to like basically have kids so they could have labor on a farm. Like that's why you had kids. People are like, oh, you have kids because we want to have them dress them up and have pictures. Back then, it's like, mm-hmm. we need people to fuel the mm-hmm. farm so that we can survive.
We will die when we're old. We need these human beings.
Every time somebody complains about a flight being delayed, I'm like, well, look, dude, 100 years ago, it would have to go from Charlotte to LA would have taken 6 months and two of the kids would have died. So like, oh, your flight was delayed a few hours. I'm so like, it doesn't do it for me. So when I was overseas, it was like, we didn't have running water for 6 months, no running water. That's like, you know, the US government shipped over water bottles en masse, which I loved. Right. And so I could still brush my teeth every couple of days and I could still take a sort of a shit. I could rub myself rinse. And yeah, I could rinse. The locals can't ever. Right. They gotta. But now, you know, I have a guilty pleasure where I watch people freak out in fast food restaurants on the internet and they just lose their minds and hit the staff. And I mean, I just feel so bad for them. I'm like, you're losing your mind over McDonald's. Like it's the most entitled thing that we've ever. So yeah, the human body is capable of a tremendous amount of stress, but we just never have to go there. So we just think that we forget that it can. We don't realize that it can.
Yeah, it's honestly one reason why I gravitate towards a lot of the sports I gravitate towards. And I always seem to find a sport that will stretch me. They're always individual sports.
Yes,
my collaboration is reserved for real estate investing, family, friends, like not for sports.
I love it's that. Like
being out in grizzly bear country on a mountain bike, you know, and I took a terrible wreck last September, and you know, it's like my bike's over here, my body's over here. It's like, what just happened? The GoPro caught it. It's just great. Like
there you go. Yeah,
GoPro is like, but you know, it's like. Just stressing yourself and maxing yourself out. Like, unfortunately, my kids, everybody's experienced hypothermia in my family. Thanks to mom, you know, like, hey, we're going on this mountain, we're going on this ride. And oh, wow, it's snowing on us now. But we're almost there. So we're going to finish this and we're going to survive and it's going to be fine. But you go through these and everybody in my family, like, we all know what we're made of. Like, collaboratively as a nuclear unit, we know it's like, it's this point we talk about it often. Like we actually didn't mountain bike this last weekend because it was like just gonna snow. And we're like, we lifted each other, we're like, no, just no. Like we just don't want to repeat that this time but we know we could do it.
Sure. So. Yeah. It's people are capable of tremendous things. They just gotta Yeah, it's just good when you try. It feels good. And then it feels good when you do it. It's like the most rewarding thing. Do what's hard. Just do what's
so
hard.
Crazy.
Nothing easy has ever been, nobody's ever found any value in it at all whatsoever.
I don't know. I've never chosen the easy life. You know, it's like the little inner rebel was, I'm going to figure this out myself. Now I've learned that, you know what? Let somebody blaze a path and then you can use your own. You can walk that path and then you can add yourself to that, you know, versus having to blaze a trap path while trying to put your creative forces into it. Like, no, just you can push easy on life and still be authentic. It's okay. You're not like selling yourself out if you're following on a trail.
No, yeah, you have to. I just mean like you have to opt in to challenges. They don't have to be like the hardest. Gosh. You don't have to do everything new, or you don't have to do the hardest possible thing, but you certainly can't do the easiest possible thing. You know, it's like people that spend 10 minutes, like, it's like drive-thrus. I won't do drive-thrus. I just can't. I mean, it's like the smallest hill to die on, but it's like, you know, it's the last thing. I'm like, dude, I don't even have to hunt. I've never had to hunt for my food. You know how easy that is? You know how easy that is?
So, okay. We're going to just step down there. Okay. This California raised, born and raised Californian here, right? Moves. Lived in Denver, started our family there, and now we live in this rural community on the Canadian border, okay? To county of 10,000 people. So it's like super small, okay? Just so small. I've never lived in a small place before, but it's really cool. But hunting is a thing here. And this California girl can harvest. I call it harvesting because our friends actually hunt. And to hunt, I cannot even imagine. But a lot of my Californian friends don't understand this thing called hunting, which I didn't understand. And I thought it was like, do your thing, but ew, gross. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, to go to the store and buy your food all saran wrapped, all nice and neat and tidy. You didn't, because we've processed, you know, we'll process, you know, game at our house. And it's like, if you go through that process, you really value every single thing and you don't waste a thing because you're like, dude, this animal gave its life and I pulled the trigger and I'm not going to let this go to waste because this is really valuable, like so much more valuable than I just paid, you know, for my grass fed, whatever.
Yeah, we have, look, I'm guilty too, but it's we live very vicariously. We take no risk. We don't see any of the risks that the rest of the, essentially the planet takes on our behalf. And then we just get fussy when, you know, the price of beef is up. I'm like, bro, I can't. And so that it all feeds back into the same thing where I'm like, we just, you know, the only thing we're good at is complaining about. It's so.
What do you think would change that? Do you think it's just going to be that whole adage, hard times create or good times? You know, that saying that my husband can say it perfectly. Like,
yeah, there's definitely some aspect of that. Built into nature. Plato predicted that basically 1800 years ago, and he's been right as far as I can tell. Most of the old religious texts have a similar kind of, you know, vibe to them where it's like, you guys are going to get arrogant and then you're going to muck this up, and then, you know, you know, something's going to come
hard times
kicking in the ass. Now that being said, we have sort of devised a way of life that never existed before those writers. So I don't know what's going to happen. It's interesting to speculate. Aldous Huxley wrote A Brave New World in 19 something, early 1900s, mid 1900s. And it was basically like, oh, we're just going to create this world where it's so easy. You just basically zonk out on drugs all day. Bang who you want to bang. All the people are genetically created, like designed. And it's like, you know, basically no humanity at all whatsoever. So, you know, one or the other, I'm seeing a little bit of a, is it going to go? People will toughen up if things come to sort of a head, you know. I mean, like, there's risk of nuclear war. There's risk of I don't think there's much risk of societal collapse naturally, but there's risk of us doing it to ourselves. Otherwise, I mean, if things keep going on, I think we're gonna have it so easy that, you know, it sort of becomes mundane, empty.
That's the interesting thing about challenges. By the way, I just have to go on record that I am absolutely enjoying. I love to have conversations that are going deeper into history and such and referring to Plato. And I very much like looking beyond. And so on a little side note here, I used to homeschool our kids way back when, and they would listen to this thing called Story of the World. And it was super cool. If you're listening to this and if you just want a high level view of world history, it's like a survey class basically, but it's told in story format. It really like just completely changed my thinking and understanding of history and looking at the relationship between countries, continents, people, everything around the globe, like through the timeline, basically. It's just absolutely amazing. So I really appreciate, quite frankly, like just your points of reference going back and everything.
Yeah, I got into audiobooks, well, 7-8 years ago now. And I was listening to, I was doing whatever it was, I was trying to learn how to make money. And I started like reading books that, I'm so sorry to say, that matter instead. And I was like, oh my God, these are so much better. Who knew? And I went on, it turns out history. Yeah, big fan of history, because history is basically like, people want to tell you how the world works. And I'm like, you can see how the world works if you watch how people have behaved.
Especially if you look over centuries.
And they've been doing the same thing.
Repeat over and over and over.
Yeah, people haven't changed. And so they're telling you what they're doing for 6,000 years, and they're writing books along the way. And then you're like, well, I don't have to. I mean, it's written. It's just like, you know, I asked this question, like, what do you think? What do you think all the books in that library say? Like, this is big library of books, and they've all like they're telling you what they're doing. But we don't spend a lot of time looking back in history, which is another way that I like to, my little act of rebellion. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to read what other people are unwilling. And it gives me a lot of good perspective. So I love reading the past, especially, what's that quote? I don't like a book that hasn't been valued by the baptism of time. It's something like,
oh, that's so great.
Yeah, I don't read books unless the book is still popular after the author has been long dead. Because then I know he can't make any money on it. It's actually just good.
Right? Yeah. Except nowadays you're kind of like, huh, is Napoleon Hill's, are his heirs getting money off of this? Are they?
yeah, not a big fan of that, but you know, Dostoevsky.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's very popular, and yet, you know, he's a hard read, but we're reading, you know, the book club is kind of, my book club that I started is basically all this. We just did Infinite Jest, David Foster Wallace's past. We did a C.S. Lewis book. Now we're reading Nietzsche.
It's C.S. Lewis. He's one of my like initial, like got me into reading a bit.
Yeah. Well, I read my first two C.S. Lewis books, three this year. I didn't realize he was a,
philosopher.
Well, he's a reformed atheist. He was an atheist turned, kind of a devout Christian. And then he wrote a lot about it. And it's interesting because, not that that's my journey, but similar enough. And so it's just interesting to hear that perspective, because it's not a common perspective by somebody so famous too. So yeah, we read the Screwtape Letters.
Oh my gosh, that's really an interesting read. I think everybody should. There's so many of his works. I mean, everyone thinks of him as like, you know, oh, Chronicles of Narnia, and then you look at, like, he writes on grief. He has an entire book on grief. I mean, he's an extraordinary contributor, thought contributor, I think, in this world.
There is a lot of smart people that have written a lot of smart books that are available on Kindle audiobook formats that you just never had access to before. And people are spending all their time dicking around with TikTok. And so it's back to the same thing that I was like, okay, you're just going to do whatever is mindlessly easiest. I just go
for
it. But
that's human nature. Humans just want to, like, we're actually like wired to go to easy, because survival was so challenging for so long that it's like, you want to go. And then the subconscious mind plays into that, because you create the subconscious patterns that are like just your defaults. But I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. It's easy.
No, I'm not saying it's right, because, well, what's the expression? You'll know it better than I do, you know, but what's easy is usually not right or best.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Whatever's easiest is always the least valuable. It's my opinion, but the book we read earlier this year, Infinite Jest, was basically about that. David Foster Wallace, I'll have to send you this link about, he has this great commencement speech called This Is Water. And it's about like, it's easy to get distracted, but life is not about these big choices that you make and these big things about how you define yourself and your interest. Life is about like the day to day and like what you spend your attention on. And it's so easy to spend your attention on getting mad about traffic or getting mad about these, you know, inconsequential things, and spending brain power and emotion, or, you know, he wrote a lot about drugs and addiction and suicide and these kind of bleak things, but a lot of them are like escapisms and outs and distractions and poorly chosen ways to spend your attention. And so, like, you know, entertainment is one of those. And it's like, what you spend your day-to-day attention on might be easy to get the simple and passive entertaining distraction of TikTok or these things, but that's not going to make your life better. And then by the end, then when you get to the end of your life, you're going to look back and be like, I just screwed around with this dancing app. Are you serious? Like, it's coming, bro. And so it's not the big things. It's the day-to-day, you know, the what he calls the temples of fanaticism, like what you choose to make most important in your mundane day-to-day life.
Oh my gosh. We're so in line, literally just talking with my kids on the way to school today about micro habits. And I think it falls in line with that concept, right? Of like all of these little tiny things that we do are what create who we are. Like all these little tiny minuscule habits, like, oh, I don't care about my grades. Well, but that thinking behind that is indicative of other things. It's like this micro habit of thinking that will affect all of life. Like, and I think a lot of people don't want to take their thoughts. There's a book, John C. Maxwell book, right? So it's on thinking. It's like, I forgot the title exactly, but it literally might be The Art of Thinking or something like that. But he talks about it's challenging to actually think, and we are not taught to think. And so it is actually exhausting to most people to train their brain to actually engage on a, you know, thoughtful level, like on a deeper level.
Go for a walk. It's like one of the untold secret to life for many people. Like, go for a walk and you'll work some stuff out. But instead, again, it's easy to sit there and just do, I'm going to watch TikTok.
I'm just going to do this.
Yeah. Well, but then you're not thinking, you're getting somebody else's thought. Like, you are, like, there's creators and there's consumers. And I mean, they're just not the same. I'm so sorry to say. But if you are spending your life consuming, it's like you're just thinking what somebody else told you to think, or you're enjoying what somebody else told you to enjoy. So you have to like kind of turn the machine off, turn the stuff off, and go for a walk and like get that hamster wheel running. And it's not easy, but it's also very rewarding. As far as your children, when you say things like, well, I don't care about my grades, I always think back to this phrase, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Boom. Yes.
Like everything I do is hyper intense. It's a lot. My lovely Miss Kate, she is not that intense of a person. Nobody is generally. And so, you know, for her, it's a lot, but it's no, I don't like balance. I like intense all the time.
She provides balance My husband is the chill. I'm the intense. So
yeah, she's like, she knows how to relax. She's like, watch this. We do candles and music and pillows and blankets and I got you. And I'm like, okay, it's all new to me. I'm gonna clench my jaw and talk about something, you know, with as much passion as I possibly can. So it's a bad habit for anybody to, if you don't care about something in life, it's okay, but you need to like understand that's something you never want to care about and be done with it. Because you're not gonna do everything in life. So like the things you do, like you should do them like you want to do everything. Which is hopefully to a high level.
Hopefully. So my dad, he unexpectedly dropped dead, literally dropped. And that really changed my life. And it's interesting because that happened later in life for me. I was 38. And all that to say, it's definitely put this like understanding of how temporary this life is and that you don't know when your card gets pulled. And you will look back at some point. And so you may look back. I remember sitting with him before at his birthday dinner, actually. And I saw him looking at the table, the family all gathered around this beautiful dining room table. And I was very close with my dad. And I was literally just sitting there watching him and absorbing him, absorbing everybody else. And it was just absolutely beautiful experience. And knowing him so deeply, I knew that he was just appreciative of everybody and reflecting on his life. I was watching it real time. It was so cool. I don't think I've ever actually expressed that to anybody. So I'm going to express it to you and to the whole world, apparently all at once. It's such a like beautiful gift of an experience, but it also really imparted on me, like, look back, constantly look back, take assessment, and trim things from life that need to be trimmed. Don't hold on to the things that are going to weigh you down. And it's a constant, it's a constant massaging, but so it's not something I've perfected. I never will, and I don't have to, but it's something that is present in my mind always, like, just keep going forward, but look back. And do you like what you're looking back on? Because I think a lot of people, Alex, are like freaked out about making changes. They don't want to change because, well, now they won't like me or this. The repercussions of personal change, it will change all of your life. But I look back and I'm thinking, I don't like that part of me. Done. Moving on. Next.
Well, it's the same thing with the softness. It's like people don't want to take they don't want to rip the Band-Aid off because ripping the Band-Aid off hurts.
Oh my gosh, right.
So I was in a relationship that was the wrong relationship, perfectly, you know, lovely human being, but the wrong person for me. And I knew it for a very long time. And I just, you know, look, you go through, you want to end this relationship and you go, I'm going to feel guilt. It's going to be hard. There's going to be emotions. What's going to happen next? Am I going to find somebody else? Like there's fear that comes along with it. And so I could have stayed. So I ended a 9-year relationship. It was difficult, and it took a long time to undo. And then and I'm still kind of like, it's still a transitionary period for me. That was in 2020. And it's still kind of like, you know, reverberating, but I could have stayed with that person, and on paper, like, it would have been a perfectly normal thing to do. Because people just say, well, I'm with this person now, so I'll just, it's sunk cost fallacy. If you want to talk about economics, right? It's sunk. Well, it's 9 years, and you know, and you need somebody and whatever you want to tell yourself. But now, like, I think both her and I are both happier away. So people can they do it with their health. They do it with relationships. They do it with toxic jobs. Bro, quit your effing job.
Oh my gosh.
Tomorrow. For real. Just quit. You'll be fine. Jesus. You're going to, yes. Like we talked about earlier, it's your life. Like, I don't want to. So you were talking about looking back. What I've done is I started, you've seen me with my camera.
I love your camera.
I don't leave. It's my, I told
There's
her
a little sarcasm there.
I don't leave home without it. And it's been my way of being able to like give back to my friends and the people that I interact with, like, hey, do you remember this? I'll bring it up. Hey, do you remember this shot that I took of you 3 years ago? Like this thing. And it's like my way to like, cause now everybody has snapshots, but I don't know. It's my way, I guess, of being able to kind of make sure that we're all like, living the life that we want, you know?
Yeah.
Cause then you look back and you're like, okay, I had a person who saw me in a video that I made. We did every time I go on a trip, you know, I take my camera. And so there's different people, and I go on this one trip every year with some of the same people, and I hope to do more. And somebody reached out to me. It's been almost a year now. Actually, they didn't reach out to me. I found out third hand that the person didn't like the way that they looked in the video, so they went off and lost like 30 pounds. And
wow, and what it's a like, gift!
Yeah, and it's like not a big. It's she's going to be happier,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, and it wasn't something that I did. Like, I didn't make anybody look bad on purpose or anything like that. And she didn't look bad by any means. It was just like one of those things where it's like somebody gets to now see, like you said, I saw my life looking back and I didn't dislike it, but I saw it in it from a different light. And it was able to, that person was able to reflect in a way that it couldn't do on their own or didn't, you know, it's easy to look, bro. The easiest person to lie to is yourself. And it's an incredible phenomenon to see somebody lie to themselves, but they do it. And I do not recommend it.
I think everybody, I would say, I am going to just say it. I think most people in this world right now are completely just obsessed with lying to themselves. They know, they feel in their heart, they know in their spirit, in their core, that they're not living to their, I'm huge on people tapping into their inner potential. You were created with something extraordinary. And you need to live that out. That is your contribution and gift to the world. And most people are wrapped in fear and lying to themselves that this is the best they can do.
Lying to yourself is like, you know, Nietzsche, Dostoevsky, all right, both of you already talked about, Jordan Peterson, like these are, and many, many more, you know, Dostoevsky said like the worst crime you can commit is self-deception. you know, and he's a smart fellow. Tolstoy, like there's, this is well-documented error. Now we don't read these books, so we don't know, but self-deception is a catastrophically bad thing because what happens is like in Tolstoy, in Anna Karenina, it's like this chick and she, what she does is you've seen it. Everybody's seen this. Everybody has seen the scenario. Person's in a relationship that has whatever problems. I don't know what the cause of problems are. They're almost irrelevant. Somebody's at fault. Most likely both people are at fault. That's generally how they devolve, right? Generally. One person starts messing up and the other person messes up in retaliation. And then it devolves. And then what happens is one person wants out. And so then they go to all their friend groups and they say, oh, my husband or wife is, you know, garbage. It's a garbage human being. And they're either not doing this for me or they're this, da, 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 and they're a sack of, you know, whatever. I'm not going to swear in your podcast. And they're going to, and they're a garbage human being and I want out and they're treating me bad and I deserve better and da, da, da. And they tell you whatever they need you to hear to believe them. And then you get convinced. And then you're like, yeah, you should leave them. And the lies started with themselves. Because the thing they should have done is gone and said, like, what's the real assessment of what's actually, like, who's actually messing this up? Because I don't always know, right? I left my relationship. Some people should be out of relationships. But a lot of times I know people in relationships that are perfectly fine. And what they're going to do is they're going to convince themselves that the relationship is garbage. Then they're going to convince their friends. And then their friends tell it back to them and then they leave. And then they go to the next relationship. And guess what? That doesn't work either because the poison... You brought the old poison into the new relationship, which is the self-deception. And so, I mean, that's just one example, but it happens with entrepreneur, like ambition, potential. It happens with health. It happens with relationships, kids, jobs, all this stuff.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, yes, 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 and yes. So, okay. In your opinion, how would you say someone would identify if they're deceiving themselves?
I don't know if I can say this.
You can say it.
High dose psychedelics will cure you up real quick.
You can say this. And there is it. I'm like, you're totally fine saying that. And it's interesting because there's such a growing movement towards that. I haven't participated in that, but I know people who have, and it's been extremely insightful for them.
Yeah, you need a friend. So I'm that friend for most people. I'm not going to sugarcoat. If you're not going to do that, I mean, that's not a solution for. It's not a.
Most people are not going to do that.
Most people are not going to do that, and then when they do it, they don't really actually do it in the right situation, so it doesn't do what they need it to do. So I'm not actually recommending that. But what you need is you need a friend who's going to tell you the no nonsense truth, and that is not an easy friend to find because most friends, your close friends, are going to tell you what they know. They already know how far they can push you, and they're not gonna push you enough. Like, I'm a friend that'll push you away all the way. I'm a friend that'll be like, you know what, I really like you so much that I'm going to, you know, basically say something that we can no longer be friends for anymore because I care more about you doing you better than I care about you and me doing it together. But that's a lot of times, if you can get a friend that'll just hit you right between the eyes and tell you where you're messing up, that's a good help. Third option is therapy. Therapy will work because it's essentially the same thing. It's like, let me go tell you all my problems. And then eventually, if you go long enough, the therapist is hopefully going to tell you, okay, your problems, you're the problem. You're almost always the problem, right? Like I was talking to Scott Trench the other day and he's like, how's life? You know, this and that. And I'm like, look, the reality is all my problems are in my mind or self-inflicted. So
can everybody just say amen to that? Because really, if we take stock and assessment, that is the reality of it.
Yeah.
And like one of the good checks and balances is like, are you actually starving to death?
No.
Like, no. Did you actually get fired from your job? Did your partner actually leave you? No. Okay. Then what are you doing about?
Oh, life is hard. It's supposed to be hard.
Yeah. People don't want hard.
No, they're like, well, my life's hard. I'm like, yeah, it's built into what's the old ragu? Like, it's in there, like ragu. It's in the sauce.
It's in the sauce.
It's built in. Yeah. It's part of the, it's not a bug. It's a feature.
Yeah. But you know, if it wasn't hard, and I've exchanged the word hard for challenging because of I really believe in semantics, and I feel like hard has like so much associated with it for people that presenting it is like, yeah, there are challenges. We all go through challenges, and all of those should lead you to the next version of yourself. Like, it's sanding, it's sandpaper, it's refining. It should be challenging. And sometimes you need a bigger grain or whatever. Like, you need a different grain. I don't know too much about sandpaper, except that there are different grains and it will sand in a different way. Let's talk emery boards for a second, you know, and I'm, you know, trying to keep my nails short, you know. So I'm just saying, sometimes you need that in all the time we need that in life. And sometimes we do need the softer side, but at no point should that ever stop.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. It's easy to say, it's hard to do. But it's not that hard to do. It's just, we're creatures of habit. We're creatures of complacency. It's a terrible situation. And so, like, fighting against the complacency to go off and, like, you know, it's just easier to go back, grab a bag of Doritos than it is to go run. It's just easier. It's mm-hmm. worse for you every single time. It's going to make you less happy. Like, there's zero benefit to the Doritos. It costs money. There's 100% benefit from the run. Like, it's not even close. But you're probably going to pick the Doritos. Like you just, most people
look
are just going to pick.
Look at culture. Yep.
Yeah. They're going to. It's like, is it easy to read? I read, we read long books, like obnoxiously long, tragic books in this book club. Tragic or sometimes difficult. Infinite Jest was tragic. Miss Kate is still sad about it. And it's like, do you want to read an 1160 page book about, you know, drug overdose and suicide? Or do you want to watch TikTok dances? Like, I know which one you want to do. She asked me, she goes, are you enjoying this? I'm like, no, it's not about enjoyment. That's not the point. The point is to learn. And so, do you want to get better? Then you got to go do something that you've never done before. It's hard. That's obnoxious. That's miserable. And the worst part is a lot of times you got to do it like every day. It's not even like you said, like a hike. It's like, you know, I went to Iceland and we hiked these volcanoes and it's like, dude, that's not going to get you. That's not really going to change your life. It's like, you got to go hike a volcano every week forever. It's the gym. It's like, you know, you go to the gym and you get in shape and you're like, you completed it. You did fitness. You win. Guess what? Stop going. I dare you. I dare you to exactly. stop going and then you lose. Like, it is not a game. It is a fixture.
Within so,
like
a you said, week.
Yeah. Done. It's like you said, life is about finding the process, the challenge that you enjoy the process of.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like the way you said it better.
Yeah. I'm you know, I got to gift the gab kind of thing. Rip off some wisdom.
You're a wordsmith.
Yeah.
It's one of the many, many qualities I appreciate about you. Oh, I don't want to have to wrap this up, but we do have to wrap this up. We didn't even talk real estate, which is par for the course for you and I, because the first time we met, we didn't talk real estate and we were at a real estate event.
Real estate is easy. Buy, wait, go do something else with your time. Exactly. Done.
And this is why I focus so much more in every conversation on thinking and who somebody is. And you know that because we've spoken about it. It's like, I don't have to talk all these other things. I want to know who you are first. So anyway, you're an all-star. I really appreciate you. I love your photography and your work, even though I'm pretty sure that I was the most unnatural person photographed there at that event. And I love that. I just want you to know that I love that I'm like totally awkward in front of a camera. Like anytime I'm in front of a camera, like.
Dude, I threw you off your game hard. It was very fun to see.
It was actually fun to participate in. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, this is an experiment for me too. Like, this is fun. We're both experimenting and this is how healthy people should live life. Like, don't stay in your comfort zone. Like, get into the weird zone.
I love, yeah, the camera gets me like very unique social interactions because, like, you know, there's just not that many people running around shoving this big camera in your face. And like, hey, let's actually try to, I'm not taking snapshots. Like, actually, let's try to make something, you know, unique and amazing. And so then I just, you know, especially when I first meet somebody, it's fun. I'm like, hey, look, you're gonna be a model now. And you're like, no, I don't want to. I'm like, I know you don't, but let's go do it anyway.
I will break your camera. I'm not a model.
No, you're great. You're great. And we got some good shots. So it's fun.
Yeah. You got a great shot. Just by the way, you got a great shot of one of my friends, Richard Guy, as we were doing that. And it was fun for me because, okay, I know we have to wrap this up, but throwing this in there, that putting myself outside my comfort zone and then having one of my friends with earbuds in, pretending to work, watching the whole thing go down. There were so many layers to me. And I had a couple friends that were around with, and I mean, cause that's how that kind of event is. And I felt like that was like extraordinarily liberating to be like, no, not only am I my authentic self, but I'm going to be this awkward authentic self that you're seeing this awkwardness, and that's okay.
Next year, here's what's going to happen, because this is a process. The camera is a process. Next year, the shots will be twice as good, and because we'll have a different vibe, and so you'll be like, okay, now we're gonna.
I felt like the shots are really great, though. Quite frankly, I was like, I love it. It captured it.
You haven't even seen my final form yet.
Oh my gosh. All right. So where do people get to go and hang out with you, and how do they connect up with you? You do crush it in real estate, and people are vibing with how you approach life in general. So like, let's just go there.
Actually I need your help, because I need somebody's help. I have been doing blogs and podcasts and stuff, kind of stuff, for a while now. My website that I did for the last 4 or 5 years is called brokeasachoice.com. I still blog on there. I still do update it, but I need to do something with a dedicated, singular focused community. And I am looking for somebody to help me like kind of figure that out. I don't know if you're that person, but maybe somebody listening, like I need somebody to help me. Like, I don't know what the next stage of my life is, but I need to create a community of like-minded people that I have a lot of wisdom and help, things I've learned that I can help impart. And I want to be able to create something better. But in the meantime, brokeasachoice.com, you can find me. I do a lot of smack talk on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. I just posted my Iceland video on YouTube. I'm around.
Nice. He is very much around, and you very much need Alex in your life. So make sure that you go and follow him and, you know, engage in all of his content. And if you're that person that is like, has listened to this and you're like, no, I know where you need to, you feel aligned, like make sure you reach out, and maybe there's some collaboration that takes place that is like the next level for both of you.
I'm not selling anything. So if you want to talk to me, like we're going to do it for friends. I'm not trying to sell you nothing. I have nothing to sell. So you have there's no awkward, like, oh, he's going to pitch me some funnel. Nope. I'm a terrible capitalist. I wish I could sell you something.
We're kindred spirits. Oh my goodness. So similar. I'm like, just take it. I don't know what I have. You want it?
Yeah. It's fine. I don't care.
Just take it. Like, it's not about the money. It's about the journey.
Everything I learned was from from people who died 100 years ago. I would be an asshole to turn around and sell it to you.
And you know what? Really, you could go read it on your own or learn it on your own. Just don't. Make life easier. All right. Amazing conscious investors. I hope you enjoyed this awesome conversation, insightful, authentic, real conversation that Alex and I got to share. And I want to remind you, remember, adventure, it belongs on the trail, not in your investing. So keep adventure where it should be. And until next time, live big, love even bigger.